Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. Stanford University has put in place a new ban on hard alcohol at campus parties. That's anything over 20% alcohol by volume or 40 proof, so your vodkas, your whiskeys. They're also limiting the size of bottles that students are allowed to take onto campus or keep in their rooms. This is all in the aftermath of the case of Brock Turner, an athlete convicted of sexually assaulting another student at Stanford. Both had been drinking, and before getting a light sentence, Turner blamed his behavior on the school's alcohol and party culture. Now, we asked you about that.
Jerry Lynn calling from Bedford, Texas. I was not a drinker in college, but I observed many who clearly intended to use alcohol consumption as their cover for decisions for which they didn't want to take responsibility.
I'll say that I partied a lot in college. It was the 70s. It was kind of a way of life then. I certainly did blame the buzz for some of the stupid choices, but I never thought that that made me not accountable for my actions.
This is Maribel from Fort Lauderdale. Alcohol was a major part of college life. Keg parties were the norm, and if you didn't participate, then there was something wrong with you.
So back at Stanford, school officials say they're trying to reduce the likelihood that students get very drunk and make very bad judgments. The question is, will it work to do that? And if it does, will that do anything to reduce sexual assaults? There are a lot of critics of Stanford's policy. Joining me is David Hansen, who's been studying collegiate alcohol policy for 40 years. He's a professor emeritus of sociology at the State University of New York at Potsdam. And also Daniel Miles, a junior at the College of Charleston in South Carolina. He's Vice President of the Campus Chapter of Students for a Sensible Drug Policy. David and Daniel, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Professor Hansen, what are these policies at Stanford and others like it at other schools supposed to do?
Well, the intention, of course, is very desirable, and it's to reduce heavy, excessive drinking. It's doing this by trying to very severely limit or prohibit the consumption of liquor or distilled spirits. I'm afraid that this policy is very likely to be counterproductive.
And why do you think so?
Well, it's based on an old myth, and that myth makes an enormous distinction between liquor or distilled spirits and beer and wine. In reality, standard drinks of beer, wine, and spirits contain the very same amount of absolute alcohol, which is 6/10 of an ounce. And so these drinks are, in fact, identical to a breathalyzer. And I think that the policy sends a very dangerous message in making and reinforcing this false distinction. There are no drinks of moderation. There are only behaviors of moderation.
Well, Dr. Hansen, the proponents of this policy haven't advertised it as a panacea. They've basically said this is harm reduction. It will help fewer students get drunk really, really fast, where they make bad calls and have bad judgment, and will help the inevitable partying on campus be just a little less intense. But you don't buy it.
I buy the goal, which is a laudable one, but I think that the approach is very, very wrong. There are alternative approaches to this problem. One of them is social norms clarification. Now, we know that students tend to believe that most other students drink, that they drink more often than they really do, and that they drink more heavily than they really do. Most students then want to fit in, and so they're inclined to try to meet these imagined social norms. And the social norms clarification approach is to go onto a campus like Stanford and to conduct a widespread survey of student drinking behaviors and then to widely publicize the reality, the facts on that campus. Once students realize that there's a large proportion of abstainers and that most students don't drink as often as they imagine and that they don't drink as heavily as they imagine, then students are really empowered to drink less, which is what they usually want to do.
Daniel Miles, you're a junior at the College of Charleston there?
That's right.
Well, you're familiar with the new policy at Stanford, and you're also ensconced in a college yourself. So how do you think this fits into the realities of student life and how people behave around alcohol?
It means that students are going to keep on doing it anyway. They're just going to get more punishments for them. And it means that students are going to drink more heavily at pre-games or, you know, in the, quote, underground before they go to these parties. in my opinion, as sort of a student on the ground, it really doesn't do much other than just add another punishment to the list that students are going to receive if they get caught drinking.
Professor Hansen, that's the opinion of one student on the ground. What about the data? I mean, the point here, reducing drinking is probably good by itself, but the point here is to try to mitigate the circumstances under which things like bad calls and sexual assault and inappropriate sexual behavior can happen. Do we know if it works?
We have no reason to believe that simply restricting the consumption of spirits is going to have any impact. In fact, there's a lot of research that suggests that this policy is, in fact, going to be counterproductive. We know that when people expect to be able to do something, for example, to drink spirits, and when they believe that they've been unfairly denied the ability, then they experience a reactance to this. It's called reactance theory, actually. What students and other people do is they tend to do that which has been prohibited under these circumstances as an effort to reestablish their autonomy and their freedom.
Danielle Miles, critics at Stanford, both professors and students, have reacted to this new policy, basically saying it's a way for the university to not go head-on against sexual assault, that students who are convicted of it should be expelled, that the university could be doing a lot of other things besides talking about alcohol. How do you view that from where you are there in Charleston?
Well, I think the standpoint should be that sexual assault policy is not alcohol policy. Despite the fact that they're extremely interwoven, no one doubts that. Bans such as these are really going to only move the sexual assault problem further into the shadow of stigmatization. Victims of sexual assault are probably, if anything, going to be more hesitant to come out in places where these sorts of bans are in effect, because then they face another barrier, possibly more beliefs of disciplinary charges if they were to come out, admit what they were doing, and seek the help that they really need.
So, Professor Hansen, before we let you go, I just want to revisit one of the places where we started, which is that your data shows that if you survey students on how much they actually drink and then tell all the students, hey, people aren't drinking quite as much as you think they are, they might in fact drink less.
That's right. And much research has demonstrated this. Most students believe that most students drink more than they do. Once you clarify the actual facts and simply tell the truth about what's going on, that this enables people to drink at the level that they really prefer, which is almost always less than the imagined norm.
David Hansen is professor of sociology at the State University of New York in Potsdam. Also, Daniel Miles, a junior at the College of Charleston in South Carolina and vice president of Students for Sensible Drug Policy there. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.